This podcast is a Majestic Giraffe production. For more information and more content, visit majesticgiraffe.com.
Where we bring you the best of whatever we happen to be excited about right now, be it crafting, cosplay, or computer games. I'm Emily, and guest hosting tonight is my brother, Steven.
Hello.
Tonight, we're talking about Sherlock Holmes and several of his iterations, so sit back and relax, because woe is us. So, Bree has been snowed under with work, so Steven has graciously offered to step in tonight, so I suppose this should actually be People of Odd Enthusiasms, which means Poe is us, so quoth the Raven nevermore. But now, before we get any further, we should have a word from our sponsors. Steven?
The Tachi Station Radio Network is supported by Audible.com. Listeners to this podcast can get a free audiobook when they sign up for a free trial by clicking the link at tachistation.net. That's tachi-station.net.
We are also supported by Her Universe. Flaunt your world with Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, Doctor Who, and other fandom merchandise just for her. Click the link on the website to help keep the lights running on our podcast. So this is the point during the podcast where we give you our book recommendations of the month. Steven, have you read anything interesting of late?
I don't know if I can say that I've read it recently, but the thing I'm most excited about is the fact that I pre-ordered Skin Game yesterday. It will be delivered on the day it's out.
Yes.
That would be the latest book of the Dresden Files. I think it's book 15.
Yes. I'm so excited that it finally got a release date. So.
Oh, I was so excited. I saw jimbutcher.com about 2 days ago, and I was like, oh, it's out. I've been checking it weekly.
Yes. I just read Terry Pratchett's new book. Shane imported it for me from Britain, since it won't be out in America until March. So Raising Steam just came. I just got Raising Steam, and it's wonderful, by the way.
Is it still in the Discworld series?
It is. It's a Moist Von Lipwig book.
Oh, wow.
Yep. It's about trains. It's really great.
He's a really great author.
He is. My recommendation...
What other books have you been reading lately?
Oh, what other books have I been reading? Tons of stuff to do with my dissertation. Quite a few romance novels, just to give myself something mindless to read. I bought The Fault in Our Stars by John Green, but I haven't been able to bring myself to read it yet because everybody says that it's really emotionally wrenching. I bought Divergent. I have not read it yet. I've also bought and started reading a book called The Sheriff of Yrnamyr, which was billed as something Douglas Adams and Terry Pratchett like. And I don't know if you remember when Dad tried to read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, he said it was like Dr. Seuss for adults. Remember him saying that? Well, this...
Yeah, I do.
This is how I feel about this book so far. This actually, it might be Dr. Seuss for adults. It's that weird. But it's entertaining. But I did read The Ocean at the End of the Lane over the holidays by Neil Gaiman, which was his latest book, and it was really wonderful. So. But.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yep. but I have a recommendation for this month, and it is called Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes by Maria Konnikova. Konnikova is a graduate of Columbia with a PhD in psychology, and her book is about how we can use Holmes's idea of the brain attic, or the mind palace if you watch the BBC Sherlock, to become more observant and sharpen our own thinking. I think the book itself might be better titled How Sherlock Holmes Thinks, because it doesn't quite give you techniques so much as it explains how Sherlock's brain works. But Mastermind came out in paperback January 1st, and our friends at Penguin Random House have given us 2 copies to give away to listeners of our podcast. So here's how to win. Just comment on this podcast post at toshi-station.net that you would like to enter for one of these 2 giveaway copies. And we will select 2 winners at random on January 31st. So this contest will end at 11:59 Eastern Standard Time, January 31st. And please note that this contest is only open to U.S. residents over the age of 13. Okay? So just go to the post on toshistation.net that has this podcast and say, hey, I want to win a copy of Mastermind. Make sure that when you comment, you're not anonymous. You've got your email in there so we can contact you. And we will select a winner at the end of the month. Okay? And moving on to what we're watching. Steven, what have you been watching on television?
I've been watching, last night I watched the latest episode of The Mentalist, and this season I've finally been excited with the show again. I think it's been extremely slow the past few seasons, and there will be spoilers ahead, so I'm giving you fair warning to fast forward a minute if you want to. He finally catches Red John at the end of last season, and I'm so glad because they have drawn that out way too long, and I think the introduction of the new love interest for Jane in the form of the CIA agent is going to be good. Because I think it kind of ruins a story when the main character and the love interest actually finally get together and achieve that sort of success. I think that's sort of the last sign that this show is soon to expire.
Yeah. I know some people have been feeling that way about Castle lately.
Yeah, I'm a little worried. I mean, I think that by the time that they get married, that's when we'll start seeing the wind down to a series finale. Because I don't think that a show can survive very well without that sort of chemistry that's going on between them when it hasn't quite worked out yet.
Possible. I've been watching Justified.
Love the show.
Love the show.
Well, we've just started watching it, and I'm only through season 2, but the first 4 seasons are available on Amazon Prime. And if you've not watched it before, it's about a U.S. Marshal who is reassigned to the Eastern District of Kentucky and spends a lot of time working in Harlan County, which is where he's from. And if you're from Kentucky, like Steven and I, there are some nitpicky things that will bother you. Like, there are certain places...
There is no Tate's Creek Bridge.
There is no Tate's Creek Bridge, and it is not... Tate's Creek is not out in the country.
I live on Tate's Creek Road, in fact.
Yes.
At least for another week.
It's not out in the country! You know, and oh gosh, and you cannot go to
Lexington
Cumberland.
Is the second largest city of our state, with a population of 250,000.
Yeah, and you can't go to Cumberland to get a drink because Cumberland's dry. Things like that.
Yeah, for real.
Corbin is the nearest place to get a drink, but there. Oh my gosh, they have the people
and that's
absolutely
only been,
right.
That's been for less than a year.
Yes, but the people are so. Right on, and because I don't know how many times you've watched the show and thought, yeah, I know them. I mean,
I have a question for you, back to books related to this show. Have you read The Bluegrass Conspiracy?
I have not.
I believe the last seasons of Justified was based on that.
Okay.
It's supposed to be itself a story of some events and I want to think somebody's told me that apparently at some point the CIA smuggled cocaine out of the Lexington airport. And that might have actually happened, and Of course, the justified take on that would be totally artificial.
Huh. I don't know. Shane was reading Raylan, the book that Elmore Leonard wrote. So I don't know what he's thinking about it. So I may pick it up when he finishes it.
It's been recommended to me, but I've not read it myself either.
Yeah. I keep trying to get Dad to watch it. I think he would enjoy it. All right. Moving on. This is where we generally talk about the crafts or costumes we're in the middle of making. I'm working on a new cross-stitch project for my dissertation right now. I know Priya is currently trying to pare down her Excel list of what costumes she's going to do this year. Steven, you're not much of a cosplayer, but you just updated your computer, didn't you?
Oh, that's right. HAL has been upgraded. We are now on HAL 3.
And of course you call your computer HAL. You have for years.
Yes, it features the i7 6-core Intel processor, the Sandy Bridge 3.2 GHz, 64 GB of DDR3 RAM. I have two SATA 3 SSD drives configured in RAID 0, 1300-watt power supply, and three EVGA NVIDIA 780 GPUs that I run in SLI mode. And when you have three of these GPUs, you can run three monitors and do 5760 by 1080 resolution gaming across the three screens.
You realize I have no idea what you just said, right?
If anybody does, the joy of this at the end is, imagine playing a game like Battlefield 4. You're playing on the center screen, shooting at people, but you have peripheral vision on your side two monitors. The game stretches across three screens.
It's ridiculous. You know that, right?
I love it. I was telling Emily, since my monitors are technically 1080, as is our TV, we could technically take three TVs and do the same setup.
That's ridiculous.
I thought you might like that.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we got a Chromecast for Christmas. And this is the greatest...
I'm not familiar.
This is the greatest thing ever. It's a little thing by Google. It's $35. You plug it into your television and you can use your computer or your tablet, your Android tablet, to control your television. So you can just take stuff from YouTube and pop it up onto your TV. Or...
Oh, that's neat.
Netflix up onto your TV. It's the coolest thing ever. So...
You can also do that if you have HDMI to DVI cables. You could hook your computer up to that.
Which is...
And use your TV as a monitor.
That's what I did to watch Sherlock the last week and a 2 weeks. Because, yes, that's... it fell off the back of the internet truck.
Americans have got to access it somehow.
It fell off the back of the internet truck. That's how we're going to put it. However, as we're moving on to our main topic, please do not forget, the BBC Sherlock will air in the United States starting Sunday. No. It'll be this weekend sometime on PBS. Don't forget, the PBS Masterpiece did help fund this season of Sherlock, so make sure that you help support your local public broadcasting station and watch Sherlock this weekend. Check your local listings for time. Now, so as we're moving on to our main topic, we are looking at Sherlock Holmes, two variations, mostly in Season 3 of Sherlock and the continuing Season 2 of Elementary, and right off the bat, we should go ahead and point out, yes, Martin Freeman is, in fact, on our shit list right now because rape jokes are never funny. That said, we're moving on. So, Steven, what is your favorite iteration of Sherlock Holmes the character? Not necessarily which version is best or more accurate, but who out of all the Sherlock Holmes out there is your favorite?
I'm actually a little curious. Outside of the elementary and the modern BBC Sherlock, what other cinematic variations of Sherlock Holmes would we have encountered?
Well, I mean, most recently there's Robert Downey Jr. I mean,
Oh, true. That's true.
House.
It may be bad, but I went back to immediately The Great Mouse Detective.
The Great Mouse Detective. I mean,
That's not quite Sherlock, but
no, but
I'm trying to think of something that is, I guess, maybe a decade or older.
yeah. Well, House is Sherlock, if you think about it. Like I said, Robert Downey Jr., Sherlock Holmes, and then you have the classic
I have actually
Holmes.
committed to Cardinals, and I've never read a Sherlock Holmes book at all.
You've only seen adaptations.
Yes. If I was to start that, do you have a recommendation? Like, what would be the first of the Sherlock Holmes books that you would start at?
Really, you can start with any of the main ones, like A Study in Scarlet or Hounds of the Baskervilles. You know, those are all the
The
main ones.
classic cases.
Classic cases, but the best thing to do is just pick up the Adventures of Sherlock Holmes that have all the short stories just kind of collected into them. And those are all except like the last 10 stories of Sherlock Holmes are now in the public domain. So you can go to Amazon and get a free copy of most of those things for the Kindle or
Oh,
your
that's great.
e-reader. Yeah, or to Project Gutenberg even. They should have that as well.
I guess to answer your question, in terms of just the two that are airing right now, I like them both a lot. I don't think that they're quite the same type of show, and I don't know if they should be directly contrasted. But I think they're telling a different type of story in each.
Agree. I would definitely agree with that. They're two very different characters.
I think I like Sherlock because they definitely stress on him, Sherlock in the BBC Sherlock. The trait that I most like about him would have to be that they seem to exhibit very well the type of confusion and despair that he must carry with him when he's walking around and talking to anyone except maybe Moriarty or his brother.
People who aren't quite on the same level intellectually as he is.
Yeah, it's because in some level he feels, I suppose that he feels himself superior, but at the same time he's at another level a total incompetent when he has to deal with him in a social context.
Right.
Whereas I feel like the American Sherlock is not quite as socially awkward as he is abrupt.
Right.
More fearless than he is careless.
I think that makes sense. Think that
And
definitely
he's
makes
more
sense.
tortured through the drug addiction.
Yes. So I wonder if there's, if each one is catering to a national audience, in a particular way.
What would you say is the specialty focus of Robert Downey Jr.'s Sherlock?
Camp.
More of his the physicality of his animal of the physicality of Sherlock himself,
No,
because that seems to be something that's stressed more so in the movies, I think, compared to the television shows.
I was gonna say mostly just camp because the Sherlock Holmes of the movies is just hysterically funny, and it's to me it's less Sherlock Holmes as it is for an opportunity for Robert Downey Jr. to be hysterically funny.
I see.
You know,
I've actually only seen the first of those movies.
well, it's like, you know, it's kind of like Iron Man, where I saw this quote from Robert Downey Jr. Somebody was asking him the difference between being Tony Stark and Sherlock Holmes, and he said, "Well, if you ask my wife, when I'm playing Sherlock Holmes, I think I know everything, and when I playing Tony Stark, I think I am everything." And so it's just when you look at like Tony Stark and Sherlock Holmes in those aspects, I have such a difficult time separating them from Robert Downey Jr. that it's hard to think of him as actually being Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, I see.
So
how would you compare the Watsons of these same three series, or the movie and the two series?
I like the Jude Law of the movie. He's fun. I'll give him that. But I cannot deny it. Martin Freeman is a tremendous actor. I mean, he's just brilliant. He's...
Oh, he cracks me up with his straight face.
That too, but then he's an incredible dramatic actor. He just is. You know, I think some of the things that they've asked him to do as John this during season three has been really... have been really, really... really, really incredible. But then I also really appreciate the risk that Elementary has taken making Watson a woman.
Oh, I agree. I think they've done a good job there, and I particularly liked in that show that same element when applied to Moriarty.
Yes.
I think that has been amazing.
Yes, and I love that she's Moriarty, because I also like that there is that one line. It says, as if men had a monopoly on murder. That was such a great line.
Yeah.
I like that Joan Watson is also a woman of color. So they're making a real effort to be diverse in their cast, which is not something that the BBC Sherlock does. Which is part of the reason that Elementary has been awarded the Women of Odd Enthusiasms Diversity You're Doing It Right Award. So, you know, that's one reason, you know, I don't know. So it is kind of hard to balance which series do you like better, because they are so different and each one has things that you love, and then you're going, well, and then this one has its drawbacks and this one has its drawbacks, but this one's really good at this. And anyway,
all right, well then, for the BBC Sherlock, What do you think about this new season? We're now three episodes deep.
Which is all there is.
What's your take on that?
It was different because they were using all three seasons to come, or all three episodes to come up to that one, to the last episode, to his last vow. And episode two was really weak.
I agree with that. I think my main summary to that to my friend EJ was, I don't think they have enough content in that show to do two-thirds of an episode as a flashback.
Yes. And I'm still confused as to how the murder in The Sign of Three worked. This still didn't quite fit with me. But
surely the belt is not so tight that they don't feel a piercing blade in their side.
Yeah. I would think that would... you'd notice.
Mm-hmm.
But moving on, I love Mary. I love that Mary takes on Sherlock and just doesn't take any crap from him and just moves right on, and she can tell when he's lying. And
oh, for sure, the third episode messed with me a little bit when they start revealing Mary's background. I was like, oh no, Watson's heart's gonna be crushed.
Yeah, Yeah, I was there is.
But I'm glad she came back around. I think she's going to be good in the future. I'm glad that she comes in with the skills with the hitman skill set rather than being the bystander that could be a liability for Watson.
Yeah.
I have a feeling she's going to have to swoop in and save the day at some point.
Maybe, and but I loved the dialogue, and I like that she can definitely do things, and I hope that we see more of that. Stephen Moffat isn't known for writing particularly good female characters, I don't think, or particularly what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. Empowered female characters, I guess.
I see.
I did love watching Molly Hooper slap Sherlock.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was good.
Which, he deserved it. And also, I liked seeing Molly stand up for herself. So, that was...
Yeah, it was good. It seemed like they had portrayed her in the previous two episodes as sort of being down and depressed over Sherlock, the state of Sherlock, and now that she's come back around, I think that's a good sign.
Yeah.
She doesn't need a raging loon in her life.
That's true. But, one observation that has been made online and something that Shay noticed, and this is especially true in the first two episodes, less so in the third episode, I think, but was the BBC Sherlock acting just a bit too much like the 11th Doctor and less like Sherlock? What do you think?
I can definitely see where that vibe could have come out in the first episode. I had a weird feeling after watching the first of these three Sherlock episodes, and the feeling was I felt like in the first, I guess, six episode, two seasons, you had that vibe always that Sherlock is going around and actually solving these crimes, and it felt more like things are just falling into place, and there's so much speculation that he's playing too close to the internet fan base, I feel like, rather than trying to just create the good story as a piece of cinema.
You think maybe they're reading too much of their own fan fiction?
Possibly. I think that it might have been that Stephen Moffat was floating around on forums too far before releasing the episode.
It's entirely possible.
Because I think that there was definitely a few salutes to the internet community when they start running through all the different possible theories that are not, in fact, what happened.
Yes. I would agree. Although it reminded me of the episode of Deep Space Nine when Dr. Bashir looked at Garak and said, "Are you ever going to tell me which ones of the stories are true?" And Garak says, "My dear doctor, they're all true." And Dr. Bashir goes, "Even the lies?" And Garak says, "Especially the lies."
Yeah.
So, I don't know why it quite reminded me of that, but it did. There was that thing about Caitlin Moran asking. She kind of tricked Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch into reading a explicit Sherlock and John fan fiction out loud in an
interview. Oh, wow.
And that was just awful. That was such a horrible thing to do. that was disrespectful to the person who'd written the fan fiction. That was disrespectful to the actors. And I really wish that people would not be so down on fan fiction authors the way that they are and mock them in that way. Because that was such a cruel, cruel thing to do. There was, I think it was Jimmy Fallon who, on the other hand, went through some of the Tumblr accounts and, pulled out really awesome fan art of Sherlock and showed it to Benedict Cumberbatch and was just like, here's some of the really awesome stuff people are doing, and that was cool. You know, so...
Yeah, for sure. But it's like, you don't want to ever do anything that... you're going to get all types of things produced, and you don't ever want to present things to the actors who are doing this in the first place. It's going to inhibit the thing that everybody's enjoying and going off and creating fan fiction stories about. Like, keep it going, yeah, keep it positive, reinforce them if you like the show.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that's... You know, I know that actors are aware that it's out there, but, you know, you don't have to... If that makes them uncomfortable, too, you know, you don't have to go slap them in the face with it.
But, that's for sure. Do you think that But what do you think on that point? Do you think that the Sherlock, in particular, has been acting a lot like Matt Smith's iteration of the Doctor?
He certainly wasn't acting like Sherlock. And, you know, and I was wondering if it was... I was wondering a little bit if it could be chalked up to the fact that he'd spent 2 years away. And they were definitely hinting towards the fact that he had been lonely. But even that, it seemed a little much in the Sign of Three. Because I could see Sherlock... In some cases, you know, his best man speech, it was really good. But he was just a little too self-aware in that episode. I could see him making the best man speech, but that would be it. And he kept making other comments that showed that he was aware of his...
It was very drawn out.
Yes, and that did not seem Sherlock-like to me. So, there were many parts of it that didn't seem... Maybe not quite like the 11th Doctor, but didn't seem Sherlock-like, I should say.
I felt like, especially as they... For instance, when they show Sherlock visualizing text messages and that sort of thing and show it on screen, I think they do a good job of trying to put you in his head as he's going through the exploratory process of trying to work out a mystery. And I don't feel like in that particular episode that was how they presented it. And it sort of broke that theme for me.
Yeah.
Because they're taking you off on tangents, not his actual thought. It wasn't Sherlock's thought going wrong. It was just a scenario you were led to believe might be possible, and they're saying, no, just forget the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. Although I will say, speaking of the text bit, John Stagnite, when Sherlock was drunk, and he's looking at things going... looking at the chair and going, it says city thing. that amused me.
Yeah.
So. Let's move on to Elementary a little bit. Moriarty showed back up on Elementary this season. So, just a few weeks ago.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's great.
So what do we think about this, other than the fact that Natalie Dormer may be perfect in every way? And, of course, you watch Game of Thrones, so you see her on Game of Thrones, too.
Yes, she's excellent in everything she's in.
I just realized she was in Captain America, too.
Oh, was she? What part was she playing?
She is the blonde girl that kisses Captain America and gets Peggy Carter pissed at him.
I really like the play that they have between Moriarty and Sherlock, where they seem to be like the only people quite on the same level that have a good understanding of each other. But then you have that added mix of Watson being there, and while she's Sherlock's protege, I don't think she's quite, you know, she's still the protege level. She's not become the sensei. I don't think she's quite at Moriarty's level to be that for Sherlock at this point.
Nope.
And that's what makes the good romantic conflict.
But what I think is also...
But I've not quite gotten the vibe that Sherlock is super interested in Watson either.
Well, I don't think that I don't think that they are. I think it's one of the few truly platonic relationships on television between Sherlock and Watson on Elementary. One of the true fewly male-female relationships that's platonic. But what's been interesting to me has been that the relationship between Watson and Moriarty on Elementary, because, you know, this last episode, Moriarty told Watson that she'd been on her mind because Watson was the one who outthought her in the last season.
Yes.
And so I wonder if there's part of it that if there is, by making both Moriarty and Watson female, if there's something there about that maybe Watson and Moriarty understand each other on a level that Sherlock will not quite get because he's not a woman?
Grasp, yeah, for sure.
So, I don't know. What do you think?
For me, thinking of with Sherlock being the center of it, I wonder exactly what the... There seems to be a lot of tension between Moriarty and Watson, and like you say, because there doesn't seem to be so much romantic interest between Sherlock and Watson that they haven't built that quite up. I'm not quite sure how they seem so threatened by each other, even though Watson was responsible for outsmarting Moriarty in the previous season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I that's the thing that seems the strangest to me. It almost seems like an unjustified amount of tension.
That's a good way, interesting way of putting it. Well, I mean, speaking of Joan, what do you think about her relationship with Mycroft?
Now, I just recently watched the BBC Sherlock, and that Mycroft is overlaying the elementary Mycroft. I'm going to look up a picture real quick.
Because the Joan Watson of elementary, of course, has been sleeping with the elementary version of Mycroft.
Oh, sure. Okay. I recall him exactly as I see his picture.
Yes.
He is shady. It's yeah. Mycroft shady in both Sherlocks, but what is he up to with Mr. Holmes?
Yes. And what's going on, I mean, because he's a restaurateur, obviously, but, you know, Mycroft has always been the British government, and obviously he's up to something else, which doesn't quite make sense, but...
I had the vibe that towards the beginning of the second season that they might be moving the show to London, although they have stayed.
Yes.
Maybe they'll be here for a while, but I could see that as a possible move for the show in the future.
And maybe there'll be MI6 or something, or CIA possibilities in the future.
Definitely somebody to keep an eye out.
Yeah.
How do you like Mycroft from BBC Sherlock?
Oh, I really enjoy
his
him.
His interaction with his brother.
I really enjoy him, and I did like... I especially liked Mycroft in this last season, and I liked the whole family dynamic. I loved that Benedict Cumberbatch's parents played their parents in the series.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that the whole interaction between Mycroft and Sherlock this season was really good, and it showed them being brothers, what being brothers actually meant to them a little bit more. That it's not just a completely antagonistic relationship between the two of them. They do actually care for one another in their own odd ways. So,
for sure, I really like the dynamic between those two. Yeah. It's interesting because they're so similar to the core. Like at the moment, while they're, you know, discussing nefarious plots out front, and their mother walks out. Are you smoking?
Nope.
Identical. No.
Well, Sherlock goes, Mycroft is. Yes. You know, and and of course, now they're like, there was a third Holmes brother, and we have no idea what happened. That was interesting.
I was wondering what he was alluding to. I was kind of wondering if Mycroft was suggesting that Moriarty might be somehow related to them. That would be an interesting twist.
I don't know. Moriarty coming... Here's the question. Is he actually back?
That's the cusp of it, though.
Is he actually back? Yeah, did anybody actually die on that roof?
Well, let me ask you this. Did we ever find out legitimately how Sherlock did come back from the dead? Because I think he was still just gaming Watson at the end of that episode. Because I'm pretty sure that whatever trick that Moriarty must have used, that must have been what Sherlock has replicated to get himself out of the scenario.
Well, that's if Moriarty's really
back, that's for sure. It could be somebody emulating him.
Because, you know, although, you know, then there was the bit at the end after the credits that was not a just a picture. It was Moriarty going, "Miss me?" So, but, you know, it wouldn't have been unlike Moriarty to set something up to happen
to
after
torture him after his own death.
Yeah, if something like that had happened. So, you know, there's no telling what could have gone on. But that's going to be really interesting. So,
I'm looking forward to it. Do you know when the fourth season of BBC's Sherlock will be coming out?
With our luck, in 10 years.
A year and a half from now?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I don't think they have any set dates for anything. So, well, my friend Sarah pointed this out for me. She's a bit of a Sherlock Holmes expert, and I'm just going to read what she wrote to me, pretty much verbatim. She says, aspects of adaptation are always interesting, and this whole new idea that Holmes is somehow an attractive rock star, nerdy heartthrob type. It's always been my basic assertion that Sherlock Holmes becomes whatever pop culture really desires with every generation. And that's very much an in thing, just as heroic anti-Nazi crusader was in the 40s, and a darker, more tortured persona was in the late 80s, early 90s. This is the first time I've ever seen the full-on sexualization of Sherlock Holmes, at least where it's not been a joke or a knowing parody, and that's intriguing, because it basically has no foundation in the original stories at all. One could almost say that Sherlock Holmes in popular culture follows the same basic patterns as Batman. Think about it, they're often compared, and their various film, radio, TV adaptations really have some similarities. So why do we need these different types of lone intellectual hero in different eras? What do you think?
That's really well written. I agree with, well, I mean, can't disagree with that, I suppose, but I'm not sure. I think that every generation of people, a little bit, there are things that you grow up with and things that you might have watched that maybe your dad watched me as a kid, and at some point, you know, somebody's going to realize they can make money reinventing it, but how are they going to reinvent it? What's what the new generation's going to want, which is not quite what their parents' generation was in the first place. You know, it's not written for the same audience, and I don't think that, I think the reason you get the generational shift is because children want to be not like their parents and strive somehow to vary from that in some way.
Mm-hmm. But, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, also, just, there's some interesting trends. You know, you have the anti-Nazi crusader in the 40s, and I mean, that's obvious, but then, you know, you have the more family-friendly Holmes in the 50s and 60s, and then you get she sent me a picture of this poster from a 1965 film called A Study in Terror, and it actually looks much like the old Adam West Batman series, and the poster says, "Here comes the original Caped Crusader."
Wow.
And it says Biff Pow, bang, crunch, all that on the poster as well.
It has Holmes holding a revolver.
Yeah, which is odd in many ways. You know, the late 80s, early 90s focused on Holmes's drug addiction much more. And now there's a lot of focus on Holmes's sex life in weird ways. So, you know, it's been an interesting...
I think there also is a type of idea that the, almost like the geeks are trying to reinvent themselves as, you know, people are not necessarily just that socially awkward. Like the latest episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there's two divisions, the operations sort of jock division that runs around as the muscle, and then you have the brainy research division. Well, the research division's training facility in the boiler room, they've turned into basically like a big club room and party house, and, you know, it's geeks gotta let their hair down.
Yeah, there's the geek chic.
I think there's a lot more stress to not be, you know, hackers, like from the movie Hackers, and or not, you know, some reinvent every geek as a Sheldon.
Right.
From the Big Bang Theory.
Like I said, geek chic. It's being a geek is, in some cases, becoming cool. You think?
And I think that inevitably, yeah, Sherlock has probably got to be sort of considered that at this point. He's, you know, he's the brainy type. He's full of knowledge, especially in an era where everyone's starting to offload their knowledge because it's in their pocket and it's accessible via their phone.
I think that's reasonable. I think that's a... Yeah, I think that's... Nicely done, little brother. That's very insightful. I'll have to think about that some more. Interestingly, this is kind of our last point. Sherlock Holmes was just ruled to be in the public domain in the United States. So anybody can now use Holmes and Watson as characters and write whatever they want to about Holmes and Watson's without running afoul of the Conan Doyle estate. So professional fan figures away. You can write your Sherlock Holmes and Watson fan fiction, so long as it's, you know, generic Holmes and Watson, not Sherlock, BBC, Sherlock and Watson. And sell it on the open market. So.
That's great.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. So that's, that's gonna be neat. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people had been doing that in the United States anyway, but apparently it is now official and the law of the land, etc. Well, now comes to the end of the show where we do our Ask Us Anything, and this was partly a question from for Bria, but I did do some research and got an answer from the comic book shop about this. A friend of mine was asking about comic books for her daughter. Her daughter's very young, about 3, but she was playing Captain Marvel the other day, which I think so shows excellent taste on the part of both child and parents. And yes, there are some kid comics out there, but I was asking, what would she recommend for those who are, say, under the age of 10? Because not a lot of comic books out there are suitable, and so they're having to tell kind of abridged stories. But apparently my friend's child knows all of the Avengers, can, you know, she knows all of her superheroes.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, I did get an answer from the comic book shop about this. The only really kid-oriented comic book that Chuck at Outer Limits Borough told me is out there is going to be Batman Little Gotham. But he does keep a rack of comics for kids, and a lot of back issues of Marvel Adventures, which I think, because my friend's daughter seems to be kind of going in a Marvel direction, Marvel Adventures would probably be a good way to go. So there are lots of stories there that would be appropriate for little ones. So, and if you are older than little ones, I would encourage everybody to go pick up Black Widow #1. I picked it up this week. The art by Phil Noto is absolutely fantastic. So,
It's not quite the same as the American comics we've grown up with, but there are also Japanese manga that are written for a wide variety of age groups, though I would make sure to inspect and read a summary of those ahead of time. Shonen Jump is usually a safe publisher that's pretty kid-friendly, though I would put that at about a middle school level. It's not particularly sexist at that point, but you do have to be very careful because there is a lot of what they call fan service in these manga, in a lot of the cases, especially ones that are targeted, I suppose, at like older high school teenage boys and that sort of thing. So if that's the sort of thing you should probably watch out for.
Okay. Cool. Thanks. Well, that's it for this month's show. This episode of Women of Odd Enthusiasms has been brought to you in part by Audible.com and Her Universe. If you enjoyed it, let us know by commenting on the blog post or leaving us a rating on the podcast at the iTunes store. You can also contact the host by tweeting us at Chaos Bria and at Car Kick Store. And of course, you can always keep up with what we're doing and what's going on in the galaxy far, far away by keeping an eye on ToshiStation.net. Women of Odd Enthusiasm is part of the Toshi Station Radio Network and is a Majestic Giraffe production. We'll see you next month. Bye!
Bye.